I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, and who is with me, as always?
Morning, Stephen Hawking, Henry Gilbert. Hello.
Yes, and I am mourning another person who died. Let me think. Mumbly Joe. Wait, I need somebody.
He passed away in 2016, but Kevin Curran's final episode of The Simpsons aired this week.
That's right. Famously the voice of Buck the Dog on Married with Children. If you didn't know that, he was a writer on Married with Children, and you can hear him on a lot of commentaries. Yeah, not to bring this down, but I think Kevin Curran and Don Payne are the two, outside of Sam Simon, Simpsons writers who died. So yeah. Don Payne was John Frink's writing partner for a while.
Also worked on the Thor movie.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, so RIP to all those people, even if they didn't die in 2018. We still love you.
we want you to rest in peace at all times.
But we have big, huge thank yous to give to everybody. This has been a huge month. I think we say that every month. We've been saying it every month since like December. But this has been like one of the busiest weeks of my life for good reasons. And I've worked a lot, and Henry's worked a lot, but we're both extremely happy. And we launched two new podcasts this month.
Hell yeah, yeah, we sure did. We went from being big cheeses to huge cheeses.
I was a huge cheese. Yes, we're now both huge cheeses, not regular schmoes, not some idiot who lives in an apartment. We just watched Bart the Fink. I'm sorry.
Yes, we're also part of the reason we've been so busy is we're working really far ahead. So yeah, we're with Bart the Fink. But anyway, yeah, two new podcasts. In case you somehow don't know and you're a Patreon subscriber, What a Cartoon, which is open to the public, but has the same early and ad-free thing on this Patreon where we go through a different cartoon each week. Mm-hmm. We pick a different one and talk about its history and then go through a specific episode from that cartoon.
And we also have Talking Futurama, which is a Patreon-exclusive podcast. The first episode is free on the Talking Simpsons free feed, but the rest, the other 12, I believe, are only going to be on this Patreon feed that you're listening to right now. And it's all thanks to you, the listener. You gave us the money to do this, and we're gladly doing it. And if you're new, welcome. There's a lot to learn. There's been a lot of questions going around. I've been trying to field them all, but there is a post. If you go back, there's a post welcoming new people to the Patreon. It gives you information like what the next shows for What a Cartoon will be and how to subscribe with any podcatcher to our RSS feed, to our private RSS feed.
As well as the days we post on it. And I left it open for general questions, though not a ton on there. But yeah, just we have about 200 new patrons just this month. So yes. Yeah, welcome everybody.
I think we've gone up over 1,000 in under, 20 days? Or something like that. Yeah, it's been fantastic. But yeah, I think the one question I've been getting the most is apparently the app Pocket Casts has an issue with downloading private RSS feeds. If you just Google it, you'll find the answer. It's actually on a giant bomb thread because people were asking. So it's not too complex, but it's hard to explain over and over again. So if you go search for it in Google, you'll find it. Just search for like Pocket Casts, Patreon RSS feed, or however you want to do that.
I'm an Overcast man, so I don't have that problem.
Yeah, I recommend Downcast, but I'm sure both work. I know, Henry, you do your private feeds through Overcast. That works that well.
That's how I check the Patreon feed and our free feeds on that to make sure everything goes live as scheduled.
So yes, those were our two new shows, and we're so happy to do them. And we also had another live show. I don't know, when is that? Do we have a plan for when that's going up?
Very soon. Yeah. Let's say this weekend. Because we had another thing last weekend. But so let's make that the weekend post. But
okay, that sounds good. Yes. So we just did a normal show. We did the episode Homer versus the 18th Amendment. We will be doing that as a regular episode.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But this is a chance to try our regular format in front of a crowd, and it went great. We did not have clips this time, but I believe if we try to do it in a different theater in that same venue, we'll be able to do clips. Actually, they told me that it is clip capable on that stage. So,
really?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I did not know that.
I just assumed it would have been unsafe for clipping. So I was like, all right, let's just be safe here. Just keep it simple. But yeah, it was on St. Patrick's Day. So we're like, we have to do Homer versus the 18th Amendment. It's too perfect.
It was perfect. Yes. And it was great. Again, a bunch of great fans came out. A bunch of the friends I made to the last live show were there. So it was great to see everybody. And I recommend fly all the way out here for our live show. But please do other things too.
San Francisco and the Bay Area are a fun thing.
Yeah, you can go to the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company and get one of those cool glasses.
I got a nice comment from someone saying like, can you guys do this in Berkeley? And I was like, dude, I have to leave Berkeley. You have to leave Berkeley.
Yes,
okay?
it's only fair. I'd gladly do it in Berkeley. I just don't know where it would be.
I mean, there's got to be other stages around here somewhere. It's this, well, I mean, well, it's there's schools, so there's got to be theaters around the school.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe we could do it on the campus.
Ooh.
But then we'd be attacked by Antifa. You notice how nobody talks about that anymore? Like, everybody cared about, like, Berkeley and Antifa. This really needs to be fixed. We got to do this, like, after 2 months. No one fucking talks about it anymore.
They spent that dime.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also this month, we had a brand new interview as well with Dan Graney, a Simpsons mega veteran who I didn't even realize what a fixture on the show he has been since season 7.
Yes, and he was extremely funny and maybe too humble about his role in The Simpsons. We were kind of like, no, no, you're still great, please.
Yes, yeah. I also felt a little bad for him that he felt like he had to clarify to us, like, well, you know, I did write jokes for things that I didn't have my writing credit on. We're like, no, no, we know. We know. It's cool.
We are mega nerds. But yeah, that was great. That is on the Patreon. Mm-hmm. You can listen to it. It's an hour long. And we have other interviews planned for the future that are also very big and good. So look forward to those.
Yeah. I was glad we got Graney as Embiggen was still in the news. Because Embiggen, that was some of the Simpsons news this month, that the Embiggen became an official word.
And people recently reached out to him, I guess last year, about the whole Trump thing in Bart to the Future. So he's used to the jokes he's written becoming news, or real things, actually.
All it takes is 22 years and it'll happen.
That's all. So I guess one thing we should talk about is the role of Chris in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And for the time being, he will not be on Talking Simpsons or at our live stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He is very busy with Laser Time projects, and we can say that it's been announced by now, but he is moving back to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not sure what his remote setup will be. I assume he's going to be keeping the shows the way they are, the other shows he does, but that's all in a free Bonus Time podcast you can listen to. We are actually not part of Laser Time. We have no say in their business stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all his stuff. If you want to ask questions about Chris and Talking Simpsons, you can ask Chris. He's on Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that.
You know, he is very busy, especially this last month. He's just been very busy with Laser Time things ahead of his move to Florida, that it was hard to fit it in even episodes during his last month here. So, you know, but that's the issue with Chris. We wish him well.
And I've been loving to talk to people that I won't tell you about yet. You'll be surprised by them. But we've been talking to great podcasters and great YouTubers and people who love The Simpsons. So it's great to share the love.
We have a ton of really cool guests set up already. You heard the two most recent episodes had Cap Bailey on it. After that, you're going to hear Dave Rudden, another good old time guest. But after that, we've also got some other cool new voices and maybe some familiar to you if you're a podcast fan. So I think you're going to really enjoy them. Yeah, it's just opened up a lot of, you know, with when God closes a door, he opens a window, as dingbats say. and when I just have all the Bart the Fink quotes in my head. But anyway, so this has opened up an opportunity for us to have a lot more cool guests on, which we totally have a coming up just in the next couple months. Like, we're really ahead on Simpsons now because of that, too.
Yes, we're like into May now, but it's been
close
great.
Close to it, yeah.
I feel like, unlike at corporate gigs, we're not concerned with, like, competition and undercutting people. I think in Patreon, we all want there to be more people on Patreon, so we like working together. We're not like that other Simpsons podcast. They're going down.
Yeah, when the other Simpsons podcast, and I only think of one other Simpsons podcast, but everything's coming up Simpsons. When they announced their new home of Max Fun, I was like, that's really cool. Good for you guys. Like, I felt really bad for them that they lost their podcasting home and they had to find a new
one. That's true. Yeah. You said good for them, and you threw your glass of wine to the ground.
But yeah, we have a lot of cool... It's everybody in it together on this Patreon stuff, too. Like, we're all... I was just thinking this today, reading about... you shared this cool article, Bob, about how Telltale Games fell apart and is maybe clawing itself back together. But a big part of that was just how the creative people just couldn't do any of the fucking shit they wanted to do. They were just like, oh, I'm the creative person who made all this stuff. Now that with the success, I have a ton of bosses in my goddamn ear telling me what to do. I'm quitting. And that's how it feels. I felt that at many a corporate gig.
Yeah, and the bosses, they don't care about the content. They don't engage with it. They're not that familiar with it, and they don't care if it's bad. And that's one of our main issues we talked about probably 100 times at our last job. It's just like, we just want to make good things, and you just want free crap on your sites.
Garbage is free, as I always said, and they have a lot of it on the site. And any attempt to make it not garbage was met with, like, why are you wasting our time? What are you doing?
But it was good to see them, do a fantastic reboot that's way different than, I'm just kidding, it's actually, they're doing all the same things they were doing when we were there.
It's a year later, and it's exactly the same.
Yes, don't go there. Henry has one note on here. I guess you should lead this one, Henry. I did see this clip, by the way.
So, There was some talk about Simpsons animation, whether it's good or not now, and I definitely am of the opinion it's a little too stiff still, and definitely compared to, like, if you compare even a season 8 episode to a season 24 episode, it's just like, boy, this, they just can't color outside the lines anymore. Is how yeah. it feels. Twitter user Doverboy, a.k.a. at Inkwell1931, put together a minute, about 2 minutes of video said, titled, "Man, the animation in modern Simpsons is so lifeless and stiff. It must have been drawn by robots." And then shows several scenes in it that are actually pretty well animated with very, like, fluid animation. I tweeted it out calling it Simpsons Sakuga.
Yeah.
Which, if you're not a weeb, that means when there's a particular well-drawn sequence in an anime that makes you go like, whoa, somebody really took care for these like 8 seconds or whatever and made this look awesome alongside a bunch of normal animation. And that's what these kind of look like. But my issue with them, though, is it still feels like they are very like fluidly moving, still very on-model, two on-model characters. That is my
yeah. opinion. Especially after watching a lot of great, like, Jim Reardon episodes and David Silverman episodes, and after watching, you know, the pinnacle of TV animation, Stimpy's Invention. I see these clips, and I saw the one of a guy making Homer a hot dog, and they're both, like, singing a song or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's really good, but they are clearly working within the limitations of a tool set because of the animation software they use. I feel like if this was a hand-drawn animation, it could still be digital hand-drawn animation, but it would be popping between, like, more expressive poses, not like these clearly, like, they can only pull the characters so far in one direction. You know, kudos to the animator who made that work within that tool set, but it is still very constrained, and I feel like you just have to look at the how lifeless the intro is to see where they started, and I guess they've worked their way up from them, but it's like, God, I wish they could just redo the bad HD intro. It is so ugly, it is so stiff, especially if you look at the things like, people have done comparisons, like, here is the grocery store shot in,
that's the one I
you
saw.
Know, analog animation, here's the digital one, it's like Maggie's, like, two-frame fish shake.
And Marge's head turn has, like, smears, and
yeah.
it's shifty in it in the original, and then in this one, it's just like three frames head turn movement.
Yeah, and even things like when they tried to win an Oscar with The Longest Daycare, it's a cool short, and it's David Silverman, but David Silverman can only do so much within that software tool set, and you can see where just like this just feels like off. I wish they would have been like, it's David Silverman, let him fucking draw a cartoon.
Let's spend some money on full animation.
If you want to win an Oscar, sorry.
Silverman. Yes, exactly.
I'm getting angry.
No, if they wanted to win an Oscar instead of just being Oscar nominated, then let fucking David Silverman do his job.
Yeah.
Like that's. And so, yeah, that's I will concede that is, I hadn't seen a lot of those shots, and those are very good and very good animation within the bounds of what modern Simpsons is. But it still makes me mourn the passing of scenes like in Treehouse of Horror 5, where Bart transforms into a bat. He could never do that.
Yes.
Or the way Homer moves his hands for super fun, happy slide.
Like, all of those things that were eventually ironed out. Even in the non-digital seasons, they eventually became more streamlined because, again, you're sending this overseas and you don't want them to make mistakes. You want them to, like, you don't want to pay money to get a retake because your drawing was too out there and they drove it too far. But, again, things like that is what made The Simpsons pop and made it, like, visually attractive back in the earlier seasons.
There's no going back to that. I mean, just budget-wise, even if every person within the staff wanted to get back to that, I think the machine is too rigid for them to do that now, and to, like, they'd have to completely wipe the board. They need to take like 3 years off and then come back and be like, oh, we'll do the animation better now. But I can't, if The Simpsons went away and came back, then it'd just be like BoJack Horseman animation, which I love the show BoJack Horseman, but I would not call it particularly awesomely animated.
It's basically color forms. That's really what it is.
But very funny color forms.
Yeah, they're good. It's a radio play, and it has good pictures. So I guess we can get into comments now.
Yeah, we got a lot of comments here, so let's just get right into them. I'll read the first one here. On King Size Homer, Andrew Giacchetti says, I'd literally kill to work from home until I can move again. My commute is 4 hours total. Has been for about 1.5 years, but hopefully in the next month or two, I'll move. Also, Homer actually does join a Fat People civil rights group a couple seasons ago.
Like, I missed that, but I assume it was very sensitive.
Oh, yes, very
but
sensitive.
Henry and I were talking up, we're really talking up the virtues of working from home on that recording. We love it. At least for me, I find time to get out. I work remotely at, like, cafes, my favorite pizza pub, and I find a way to, like, leave the apartment. If if you find a way to get out of your house every day and still be productive, I feel like it's like the ideal situation. Mm-hmm. And if you really need self-control too. That's also helpful. Not everyone has, I am the Ubermensch. I have ultimate self-control. No, I procrastinate all the time, but in order to make a business work like that, you need to have motivation and self-control, I think.
Yeah, it is a struggle. It is a struggle to not say, eat a snack whenever you feel like it, or look at pornography whenever you feel like it, or even just distract yourself with things that also seem important where you're like, I need to work, but I mean, this laundry, look at it. I better just work on that.
I've wanted to play Monster Hunter for 2 weeks, but I can't, like, I can play, my video game time has been limited to playing them while I edit podcasts, because it is possible if you're playing a game, you can pause. Mm. You can't pause Monster Hunter, so yeah. I've been without Monster Hunter for a long time. I'm going to play Monster Hunter for like a week straight when Henry's on his honeymoon.
But
that's my goal.
Which will be next week, babies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, also I like getting back the 2 hours of a day that I used to spend in commute when I worked in an office.
So Darren Hinchy says, I know this was probably recorded before the Florida shooting and the Kevin Smith heart attack, but it was jarring to hear no mention of either when they talk about mass shooting and Kevin Smith's too fat to fly controversy. Talking Simpsons curse almost did him in after talking about him 2 weeks in a row. Yes, I think us kind of criticizing Kevin Smith, but ultimately saying we don't hate him was like a day after his massive heart attack.
It posted that way. Well, actually, so the Mallrats one, those both posted on the Patreon beforehand, but not on the free one. But it was just very unfortunate timing. We have Kevin Smith on the brain all the time, but
it's true.
We're both recovering askew universe heads.
Uh huh. I got to say, I spent so much time on those movies. You can't call me a non fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan anymore, but I was a fan for a long time.
I was checking his website every day, waiting to see when the Clerks cartoon was going to finally get a release date.
I was just filtering for his post on the message boards, just clicking on his screen name, be like, I want to read every Kevin Smith post because he's so funny.
I'll tell you how old I feels when I was like, wow, he's about to turn 30.
Yes.
Oh man, he's posting all about it. Like, but I wish him well. Like, a heart attack is no joke. It's scary. His further explanation about how, like, the feeling he had of, well, I had a good run, you know, I ain't got no regrets. Like,
yeah, and I believe his dad died of a heart attack, mm-hmm. like, kind of young.
Scariest thing to me in that is that he felt unwell, but he contemplated going on with the show or going to the hospital. And he said, had he not gone to the hospital and just done his show, he'd have died.
Like on stage.
On stage, yeah. He would have died. So, you know, maybe go to the doctor. Don't delay that. As for the mass shooting thing, I don't even know how he talked about a mass shooting, but we have to be vague whenever we say mass shootings in this or otherwise, or we got to be real specific of just like, well, Bob, do you mean Vegas or do you mean the one before that? Like,
there are unfortunately too many to keep track of in any given year. So that's America. Mm-hmm. I think, are you next?
Yes. Jackie Beckwith says, my family had one of those green screen ancient computers right up until after Windows 95 came out. It could do 3 things. It had a word processor, a calculator, and it played Yahtzee. When we got a real PC, the very concept of spell check alone blew my mind. Side note, Dan has no excuse. I started watching at age 1. And yes, exactly.
That is true. How dare anyone be younger than us and not have our exact life experience?
Well, Dan is our age, and he should have been watching from day one.
It's like, true.
I especially am offended by that.
So Olivia says, as someone who is disabled and wants to work from home due to various reasons concerning my disability, I don't have a job yet. The reaction of Homer's bemoaning his able-bodied good health makes me cringe to this day. As someone who was born with cerebral palsy, I really wish I was able-bodied. I get the joke that Homer is a lazy idiot who doesn't know how good he has it in life, but some real-life Homer Simpsons see that the help disabled people get, like working from home or parking close to the store, as something that they are entitled to as well. They think that being disabled is a pretty sweet life. My advice to the Talking Simpsons crew is to try and remain able-bodied and independent as much as you can. Disability really sucks. The benefits are not worth the depression and frustration. Yes, I totally understand why you're sensitive to that. I think the intent with Homer was like, he's a bad person for
Homer's
trying to
bad.
Cheat the system.
That's why Lisa says out loud, like, this is for people. This actually helps people. You shouldn't do this.
I think Mark says it's monstrous or whatever.
Yes, it's monstrous. Yeah. And I mean, I said it in the episode, I'm not a fan of this stance that it just feels like that the writers were making fun of lazy jerks who take advantage of disabilities in their mind. And so
it's it's like benefits programs. Yeah, there's going to be a tiny amount of people that do fake things to get the money, but it's not worth policing everybody to get those people. I mean, you hear stories of people who have disabled stickers on their cars, getting notes written on them and stuff.
Because they don't look disabled.
Exactly.
Yeah, and same with like, oh, so why lots of people, that I heard those stories too from people who park their car with their handicap sticker on it, and then somebody comes up to them like, you don't look it. And like, I'm sorry, Detective Clouseau, but
I'll wear a monster mask next time.
Exactly. Yeah, that's bullshit.
I had a similar kind of judgy thing happen a lot when I worked at a grocery store. This is not for, you know, physically disabled people, more like financially disabled people, where it's like, they bought this with their food stamps. And I was thinking, okay, then quit your job and sign up for food stamps. You'll see how fun it is.
Get it for yourself, buddy. Yeah. If that reminds, it's in the Stephen Colbert, his first book as the Stephen Colbert. He said this funny bit about hating entitlements. So he says, like, if being poor is such a never-ending money party, they never want to get a pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Yes, I not to linger on this too long, but I remember being in grad school and making maybe $10,000 a year. I was still too rich to afford, like, sorry, I was too rich to qualify for almost every basic benefit except for heating assistance. So like, okay, we won't let you freeze to death, but you got to feed yourself and all the other shit. We're not going to help you with anything else, but we won't let you freeze to death.
All right, so moving on to Mother Simpson. This is a blanket statement to people. I appreciate you trying to be helpful, but we all are now aware that the song is Cream, Sunshine of Your Love. Thank you for the comments and the many comments on Twitter. We know we got it wrong. I will say, in my defense, I did call it all along the Watchtower. That song is in that episode.
Yes.
During the bomb section. It is Chris who says Deep Purple, which is nowhere in this episode.
Yes. Okay. We appreciate the corrections, but now you live rent-free inside of our heads.
I know.
And every time we don't know something, we're like, shut down the show. We'll look it up. Because, you know, actually, as someone who listens to the podcast, I really hate the unnecessary, like, 2 minutes of trying to figure something out that people could edit. Like, what was the guy's name? You know, he was in that movie. You remember him. He had brown hair. Like, just cut that out.
Yes. If you heard us quickly get to the name of the movie, Saving Silverman.
Yes, if there's a jarring cut.
Yes, there's a jarring cut there that you hopefully didn't even notice. But again, thank you. We're good.
Yeah.
I am aware of the song, Sunshine of Your Love. It's a totally fine song.
I pride myself on my ignorance of classic rock. I had to listen to too much of it growing up.
But okay, other than that, on Mother Simpson, Joshua Bjork says, hey guys, great episode. Just wanted to point out a quick reference that you missed. During Mona's flashback, the leftist group that she's with chants, hey, hey, Mr. Burns, get out of here with those germs. This references anti-Vietnam chants of, hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? Which was a chant that LBJ wasn't very thrilled about. We should be chanting about dead children to every politician these days. There's bullshit.
There sure are a lot of dead children. I think that was one of the ones. So, like, when I'm doing research for Talking Simpsons and something seems, like, too obvious that everyone should get it, or at least in my opinion, that was a pretty obvious thing, we won't stop to point it out. I thought that was, like, you know what this is.
So sometimes I misjudge what is obvious.
Yeah.
And then people are like, well, I'm not 35, so I don't know about this
You
thing.
Don't know about popular war chants from the 60s? So we have up next Saheed Shahirar, and I apologize if I messed that up, saying, I own Simpsons Operation, bought it for $20 at an antique market last year. Great Homer sound effects. Yeah, we looked that up. I like the Simpsons variants on board games. The problem is I don't play like regular schmegular board games anymore. I just play like German weird German board games with names like Carcassonne.
Oh, of course.
And you're trading for like wheat and lambs and wood, and it's all weird.
I like those better than just the lying to your friends games like that are popular at millennial parties these days. I'm like, I don't want to spend 2 hours lying to friends. This causes me anxiety.
Then you know which one of your friends is the best liar.
Oh, I do know at this point who the best liars are. And I'm like, huh, boy, I trust you with a lot of information. And Edward E. says, regarding the Super Bowl, the Jets versus Colt game Abe is watching is technically the first Super Bowl, as the name for the AFL-NFL championship game wasn't officially set until before Super Bowl III.
Oh, so I was right.
You were right.
I was right. You were right. It was 1967.
Yes.
So the timeline did match up, correct?
I believe it did.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
So you were correct, Bob. It just was. What people call Super Bowl I wasn't called Super Bowl I when they did it. So the first Super Bowl that people called a Super Bowl was Super Bowl III.
Okay, but Abe was watching that AFL CFL game? Is that what it was?
It was the Super Bowl III that was between the Colts and the Jets, Namath and Johnny Unitas.
Okay.
Was the right one.
Okay, cool. Okay. I forget. Now I don't even know who was right, but let's move on. So this is for the What a Cartoon episode, Batman the Animated Series. I want to say I've been really happy with all of the work we've done on What a Cartoon. And what makes me even happier is whenever we release one episode of something, people are like, you got to do the whole thing now.
Mm.
And I'm telling you, I want to, but we're human. But I love that reaction. Like, that means we did a good job and you want to hear us do more with the same series. So we'll return to a lot of these, I think.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's years and years of more episodes on this for sure. And yeah, I wish, boy, if we had the Dragon Ball time chamber, that would be perfect for this, though I'd probably use it to play my stack of video games I haven't played yet.
I have to read a lot of books, too. So Joe Hodgson says, nice job, guys. This is on the Batman the Animated Series podcast, by the way. I've been reading the book previously on X-Men by X-Men TV show developer Eric Liewald, and it's kind of funny to read about how envious he was of this show's budget and Warner. Apparently, Marvel was the driving force of a lot of the censorship on that show, whereas Warner was basically like, have fun, guys, when it came to this one, in addition to the notoriously cheap Saban, which Hank covered. Also, really surprised Matt J didn't talk about Freeze's only other appearance in the show when he's basically hired by Walt fucking Disney to freeze him so he can live forever. I think Matt might have mentioned when he was like a spider head in a jar,
well,
and that was that episode?
No, that is actually the New Adventures of Batman and Robin when he was in before the
animated
WB
series.
Seasons. Yeah, and it was, I had forgotten all about the Walt Disney one too. It's pretty funny to think of Warner doing that as well.
That is great. I love that urban legend. I'm sad it's not true.
Brian H. Rude says, fantastic first episode. I hope some more episodes of BTS are explored before too long. Also, I have to admit that I didn't get the wordplay with freeze, freeze versus boil, boil, B-O-I-L, until a Riddler trophy in the Arkham City basically spelled it out. I didn't get it until reading this comment, to be honest.
Yeah, the boil thing. I mean, freeze, I think I got back in the day, but if you have a pun name in a Batman world, you are destined to become a villain.
But it's a boiling man versus a freezing man.
Okay.
He's freezing water and he's boiling water.
I read it more as like boil, like he's a boil on society.
Oh, yeah.
He's like scum.
He's that too, but as the other side of the coin on freeze.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
It works on many levels.
So Chris J. Capel says, as someone who's watched all the DC animated movies, I'd say it's half and half in terms of quality. Some are great, some are absolute stinkers. The recent ones that are good IMO are both of the Adam West 60s movies, Return of the Caped Crusaders, Batman vs. Two-Face with William Shatner as Two-Face, wow, Justice League Dark, Teen Titans, The Judas Contract, and fortunately for Matt, Gotham by Gaslight. The later succeeds where Killing Joke failed by actually adapting the source material and not just reciting the comic page by page. And all the changes work, in my opinion, to make it a better movie. And I have not seen any of these, but I will take it on your word, Chris, that these are good.
I mean, Chris, in his avatar on Patreon, has the DC logo in it, so I trust his opinion
on
this.
Yeah. He's really wearing that on his sleeve, so he must be the expert here.
Meanwhile, for the King of the Hill, What a Cartoon, Michael Hashizume says, King of the Hill has been the slowest burn on earth for me. When it was originally airing as a kid, I thought it was the most boring, unfunny thing on TV. But the older I get, the more I appreciate and laugh at it. I realize while listening to this episode that many parallels between Mike Judge and Seth MacFarlane share in their careers. Both white American guys of the same generation who got started in comedy through cartoons but eventually moved to live action properties and became bankable figures in their own right. Of course, Judge's work runs circles around MacFarlane's. Thank you for talking about that. I'm not sure I'd go as far as Matthew calling him the greatest living American satirist, but Judge has been producing quality work for going on 30 years, and I hope he does not stop anytime soon.
Yeah, Mike Judge is great, and I think like a lot of comic book people, he got out of cartoons, and I assume he'll go back, but he got out of cartoons because cartoons are a lot of work, and you don't see results for like almost a year. I bet Silicon Valley, it's like, I wrote a script and we're shooting it in 3 weeks, and then the episode will be done in like 5 weeks.
And you get more respect with human actors.
That is
too.
True.
Yes, yeah. Though, I mean, I've heard the South Park guys complain they hate doing live action because they can't control every bit of it, which sounds to me just like, why can't I voice every person in there and I control them all and it's all non-union?
Have they done live action recently? I'm surprised there's not a Book of Mormon movie yet.
You know, no, I don't know what projects they've done outside of South Park in the last few years. Mm. They've been pretty focused on South Park. I mean, the games, I think, have taken up all their time that wouldn't be on the show.
All right, so Jack Genovese says, interesting to hear that thing about your techie friend who who can't watch Silicon Valley because it feels too real. Here in the UK, there's a show called W1A, which is a comedy about working at the BBC corporate side. And I know a lot of people who have actually worked there who say they can't enjoy the show because it's like reliving awkward real-life experiences they've had. Fun fact, the show was produced by and shown on the BBC itself. That's great. I've never seen that. I don't know how much it would connect with me, but I will give Silicon Valley a try. I worked at a really bad startup, like literally in a garage by a bunch of incompetents, and I'm like... this could be, maybe I'm far enough away from it now. It's been like 5 years. I can laugh.
Maybe.
I guess all you can do is laugh.
You'll see. You got to test it out. Watch the first episodes.
I've heard nothing but good things about it though. So I'm on board.
Nathalia says, I started with this episode of What a Cartoon because King of the Hill was one of my favorite shows growing up. I wanted this over Talking Futurama. Everyone online rides for Futurama, but few ride for King of the Hill. I grew up in Texas, and the mundane lives of the characters appealed to me because they were pretty much like my neighbors in a million ways. And as you said, their humor came from them going in deeper in character. My favorite character is Luann Platter, so named because there's a Luann Platter meal at Luby's, a barbecue place, and she had a character arc that, while it seemed to die with Lucky's addition and her getting with him, still worked fairly well. There's a few episodes I don't like, but overall the series is excellent. I hope you can give this show the Talking Simpsons treatment. P.S. The whole wedding episode being a final is because they were going to be ended and wanted to end properly and then got renewed, so they had to continue.
That is true. Actually, one of the things that Luby's is associated with is a massacre.
Oh, God.
One of the bigger ones before, you know, they got much bigger, the Luby's massacre.
Now it's a quaint massacre, huh?
Yes, it's a very peaceful massacre. But yeah, I'm glad people are really connecting with this, and I'm glad people are... I saw a lot of comments like, I didn't like King of the Hill, and I didn't know why I should like it, but you really explained to me why the show was good, and I'm glad people like the episode we chose. I think it's not one of the ones people talk about a lot, but I feel like it's a great example of how well-written the characters are and how like great the stories are.
Yeah, I mean, it's no, if I guess maybe the more famous episodes are, say, the one where Bobby learns to shoot, or the
I thought you were saying when Bobby starts kicking people in the balls.
Oh, that one too. I was just about to say that's not, I don't know you.
Yeah, that's my purse.
That's my purse.
And like, of course, the Hank Hill pimp episode and things like that. But
or the two-parters. There's tons of good ones.
Yeah,
for sure.
There are like almost 300 episodes. Mm-hmm. So.
But maybe we'll do that first season. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how the votes go.
That could be our next miniseries.
Sideshow Bob's last gleamy comments up next. Kevin Bunch says, this episode reminds me of my own air show experience. My dad took me to one when I was 11 or 12 in Michigan because I was really into old planes at the time. Unfortunately, it was raining the day of the air show, so nothing actually left the ground. Boo. We spent billions of dollars on that stuff that can't leave the ground.
Those planes can't fly when it's raining.
The highlight was speaking with an Air Force pilot who informed me that because I needed glasses, I would never be a pilot.
Cool.
So I shouldn't bother even trying. We did look into... Damn.
Was that like Admiral Dreambreaker?
We did look into going to the air show the following year, but wouldn't you know it, it got rained out again.
God.
Possibly was a little cursed.
Jesus, that guy was a real dick to you. I'm sorry.
Hey, nerdo with your glasses. I tell everybody with glasses they couldn't possibly fly this and blow up mosques.
Milhouse couldn't fly it, so maybe he was right.
It's true.
So Ryan Rood says, during my 6 years in the Air Force, I only had to deal with a single air show. The base prepared for a ridiculous amount of people to show up, but the actual attendance was pretty low. I had to come in both days that weekend to work at a hot dog booth, being a desk job guy and not a pilot or mechanic, but they had too many people at each booth, so there was nothing for most of us to do. Because of all the assigned parking for visitors, we had to drive to a more out-of-the-way entrance to the base and then take a bus over to the flight line, which wasted more of our weekend. See, these flight shows are not good. Like, let's get rid of them.
They even waste the Air Force time.
Just play a video game. Play a video game. Play Ace Combat. It's
people don't even show up for them anymore. It's just boring to them, man. Craig Sniffin says, my favorite Lyndon Johnson fact, besides the one you mentioned that he owned an amphibicar, you can still see them driving around the lake at Disney Springs. He would invite guests to in his car, pretend to lose control, and his auto would say, jam it into the river. He didn't let them know it was amphibious, and everyone was scared shitless.
God, it was very smart of JFK to have an insane hillbilly be his running mate to balance him out.
He did not expect that guy would end up being president within 2 years. I mean, we talked about him some too. Definitely somebody on Twitter complimented him to me and just like, well, look, the guy was gross and personally very racist, but he got a lot more done than most Democrats get done with, at least regard to the civil rights bill.
And Vietnam was kicked off like way, way, way before he was in office.
I mean, he personally profited a lot from it.
Oh,
kept
sure.
It going.
But it wasn't just him.
It was, no, everyone has some blame in that.
Think of that before you come up with your rhymes. So Darren Hinchy says, Henry wondered if the Granny's Fannies porno magazine was censored in the UK. I can confirm that when it first aired on Sky, owned by Fox's Rupert Murdoch, no less, in the UK, the shot was completely removed. Wow. Not only that, but the scene began with Quimby saying they only had 20 minutes left, meaning they cut out the porno, porno, porno. Similarly, in the previous episode, Mother Simpson, when Abe berates Mona for leaving him to raise Homer, the line, "Can we have sex?" was completely removed, and it cut to the next scene, which was taken out. Made me personally more sad for Abe, as he seemed to be still hurt after all those years. So I guess that softened Abe's character to not have him beg for sex.
Him begging for sex, I guess, and says, like, "And I'll never, ever forgive you," scene ends. Like, that's just sad.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a lot of hurt.
A hurt old man, not a horny old man.
So on to talking Futurama comments here. First off, on Space Pilot 3000, Purple Comet says, "Great episode, but we need to find a good death jingle for this show. I doubt there's anything as perfect as Grandpa's Simpsons rant, but surely Professor Farnsworth has a few good lines that could work. Maybe, 'With my final breath, I curse Zoidberg,' or 'Gone the way of the poodle and your primitive notions of modesty.'"
I think I really want... I like these suggestions, but this made me think of the one I want to use. And I think I'll bring it to the next recordings. It's when Bender has a funeral for himself, just to see how people will mourn him. And they're crying, and he says, "Louder and sadder." I think I want to use that one. I don't know why that line has been in my head for so long.
I do love that. I love when they just flatly demand emotions in character. Yeah. Same with Zoidberg's, like, "Your music's bad, and you should feel bad."
I love the kind of parody of bad writing they lapse into sometimes. So Andrew Bouvier says, "Henry's comment on looking for episodes in file sharing programs and getting confused by some episode names really resonated with me. When I was in college, so many of the Futurama I watched was downloaded from Kazaa/Emule/LimeWire/etc. And it was sometimes very hard to get the episodes I was looking for. Most notably, I was not familiar with the quote-unquote mob movie terminology. So I would see the episode titled Bender Gets Made, but then be upset that it was the Bender Joins the Robot Mafia episode every freaking time. I was convinced that there was a real Bender Gets Made episode where we would see the origins of Bender literally getting made, and that all the ones I got were just mislabeled." I say, sir, go to an episode guide. Stop torturing yourself. They were online.
We were foolish fools at the time. I know.
There had to be like GeoCities/TV World/0042episode.html or something like that.
In 2002, there had to be some page called Futurama Episode Guide.
Yeah.
I forget what the... There was way before Wikipedia, there was like, I think it was Anipedia. It was like the anime encyclopedia page or something. And it explained it just had like a paragraph for each anime show. But man, I barely remember it now.
I used to go there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can see its light blue background and its red text. It's red hot links in my mind.
When it was still possible to describe every anime.
Yes, yeah.
With one paragraph.
Alex Irish says, "Here's a fun story. This episode shares the same date as my sister's birthday and the Simpsons episode Maximum Homer Drive. The day this episode airs, I was so excited for the new series for Mac Groening, I dragged my mom out to Target to look for Futurama stuff, but there wasn't any merch when the series premiered, to my great disappointment. It took me until 2003 to find actual toys of Fry, Leela, and Bender, posable figures with their own accessories, and a model of the Planet Express ship."
That's true. Maybe that was another way Fox was fucking over Futurama, a show they didn't really care for. When I remember when Family Guy aired that January, like, I was literally in Suncoast that weekend looking at whatever anime VHS tapes or something, and I'm like, there's already Family Guy t-shirts. Like, there was, like, whose leg do I have to hump to get a dry martini, Brian shirts and stuff like that. So I was just like, that surprised me. I'm like, I don't even know if I like this show yet, but you're trying to sell me a t-shirt of this character.
In a way, I love that early merch on things like that because it shows you what some marketing guy thought was going to be the meme line. They guess like, oh, everybody's going to be saying that Brian line.
Stewie says, "Victory's mine."
Yes, exactly. All those shitty, stupid lines they said in there instead of the ones people actually remembered. If you'd asked them ahead of time, none of them would have thought, oh, the ultimate meme is Peter hitting his knee and holding it.
Boy, I sure am glad they dropped the like rip-off Pinky and the Brain stuff about 8 episodes in. Like, yeah. Stewie's not going to take over the world anymore. That's fine. No, he's now gay. We make fun of that.
We'll mock gays. That's about it.
It's more fun that way. I think I'm next. So this is for the episode of Talking Futurama. The series has landed, and Nicholas Basile says, hard disagree about there being no standout episodes in the Comedy Central run. I think some of the best straight sci-fi episodes happened during that run, such as the late Philip J. Fry, The Prisoner of Benda, Benderama, and Meanwhile, and some other really fun character-driven episodes like Proposition Infinity, Stench and Stenchability, and Near Death Wish. I also really love the three-parters they did with different animation styles. Yeah, there are some that aren't going to be listed on a series top 10 list, but the constant insistence, not just from you guys but others as well, that the Comedy Central run is lesser is wrong, in my opinion. The movies are definitely lacking overall, Bender's Game is meh, but I pin that more on the format, long-form storytelling versus more compact episode storytelling, and I agree with Chris when he said that the multiple stops and starts in production probably caused a bunch of inconsistencies in plotting and tone. Love the series, and I'm looking forward to you guys eventually covering all of Futurama and the far, far flung year of 3000. And I have to say, a lot of my opinion on the Comedy Central seasons is kind of like tacked to my opinion of the movies. Mm-hmm. And I was also watching them at a very bad time in my life, which did not make them any better. But I will say there's a definite difference. And I do want to go back to them. I think I only watched like maybe 6 episodes of the first Comedy Central season before I tapped out. So there's like, I don't know, 50 I need to watch. And I'm sure there's a lot that are good. And actually having doing the show makes me think, oh, there's like 50 Futuramas I haven't seen. That's kind of cool to think about.
It's exciting to face up to that possibility. Yeah, I watched the Proposition Infinity one and maybe a couple others, and they weren't even that bad, but they did feel like a season 10 or season 11 Simpsons to me, kind of. And definitely the starts and stops where they're just like, well, we upset the entire animation and writing staff again and have to rebuild again. Let's find our footing again.
Yeah, you lose a lot of that sense of team that really built the first 4 seasons when there's so many shakeups, especially, and then, like, you know, a decade passing.
Thad Komorowski says, I'm revisiting the show now and still can't put my finger on why I'm not getting in, why I can't get into it. Maybe it'll come to me while you guys do your analysis. I think the point that it's more pure graining might be it, but I'm just not sure. By the way, Baby Bottleneck and Little Buck Cheeser are not public domain, so not sure what kind of deal was arranged with Time Warner to include the low-res second clips of them.
I gotta say, either they made a deal for like a library of footage, or if you use 1 second of footage for something, it's considered fair use. Like, once you use like 5 seconds, it's like you pay for that.
That seems wild that Warner wouldn't sue Fox over that. Like, those companies don't like each other. And
it's true, but like, how are they losing money on not selling Little Buck Cheeser to people?
Nobody's selling those tapes. I do miss, in my day, kids, I could go to the video store and there were all the public domain cartoons on one VHS, or just they put in ones that you should never put on a VHS. They're like, well, here's all the World War II ones. Kids will rent this. Daffy Duck's on the cover. And that's how I learned about Hitler and
Mussolini.
And Goebbels, Mussolini, all of them. In that very funny cartoon about ducks. What if chickens and ducks were drawn as Hirohito? That'd be funny.
That's right. Yeah, a lot of questions were asked to parents after watching those videos. Shy Ranger says, when you guys mentioned the gender-neutral Pac-Person game, my first thought went to Ms. Pac-Man, since the reason she was named Ms. was because it was considered the most PC name to give her. That's true, actually. That's something that's sort of lost to time, and I think maybe even the suffix, or sorry, prefix Ms. is sort of a thing that's not passed around anymore. In case you don't know, it was sort of the women's liberation movement answer to, like, I don't want to be Miss, because that implies like, oh, I don't have a husband, but I will one day. And then like, and also it's also sort of like patronizing, like Miss. And you know, Ms. is a little more empowering, I guess. That's why there was Ms. Magazine, and there might still be. So that's a good thing. It was sort of they were just sort of doing an escalation of Ms. Like, what's an even more politically correct idea? That's interesting.
Yeah, that's a different way of looking at that joke. And as Marge let us know, Ms. Pac-Man did strike a blow for women's rights.
That's right.
And Nico Wells says, story time. The Lunar Rover ride is a reference to Autopia, where you drive yourself around and you have a metal bar in the middle. I'm not sure if this was mentioned or not, but it originally opened without the metal bar so you could pass other people or ram them. Enter Bob Gurr, the Imagineer behind Autopia, Disneyland Monorail, and Confrontation at Universal Studios Florida, and countless others. He told this story at either D23 or at a Destination D, a more parks-focused D23, the much smaller, though. On opening day, Walt Disney had Bob Gurr babysit two children of an actress Walt was trying to get a contract with. So Bob took the boys over to Autopia, and they got in the police car that they had to help with pacing of the ride. The two boys spot a smaller man driving with an eye patch, and they yell, "Get him!" Rams the man's bumper, and he goes over the curb into the grass. The man they ran off the road was none other than Sammy Davis Jr.
I guess that was pre-glass eye days.
Well, he doesn't have to put in the glass eye every day. You know, it's a lot of work.
That was actually in the 90s, every kid show did their Rat Pack episode, like Rocko's Modern Life did it. Like, everybody wanted to do a Rat Pack
Johnny
episode.
Johnny Bravo.
Yes. Stimpy did it on Ren and Stimpy, where he wanted to be just like his hero. I believe it was Sammy Davis Jr., but Sammy Mantis. He was a praying mantis.
That's right.
And he had a fake eye, so Stimpy had to gouge out one of his eyes to be like his hero. And like, Nickelodeon was like, "You'd have to do that off screen. Like, we'll let a character rip out his own eyeball, but off screen, please." So Sammy Mantis was it, yeah.
Man, I'd rather watch the Hey Arnold of Dino Spumoni instead.
I like when Filbert from Rocko's Modern Life became a crooner.
What was it with that Rat Pack shit?
I
guess it was a cool thing then, but now it's a pack of jerks to me.
Yeah.
One thing that really made me hit the Rat Pack was seeing that they did this video when the Beatles were fresh.
Mm-hmm.
They did a video, or they did a little song to, and by they I mean like Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra. They're on a talk show and they do a song to Pop Goes the Weasel, except I hate the Beatles. And it's about how they have no talent and they're just fancy pants kids with their long hair. And as I'm watching it the whole time, I'm thinking, you've never written a song in your entire life. Like,
that's
you're
true.
Just some fat jerk who gets stuff handed to you to say, like, fuck you for
you have like a 300-piece brass orchestra like backing up your talking through a song.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, bang, bang, bang. Hey.
I mean, maybe in the 30s Sinatra actually sang back when he's parodied in those Looney Tunes cartoons. Oh, Frankie. And he was like drawn as being like rail thin. It was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird to see those as a kid. Like, is that Frank Sinatra? So I believe our last comment is from Mike Wasson, who says, "Is it too obvious to mention The Moon Shall Rise Again has another far more literal interpretation? They're so good at packing in multiple layers." And that is true. That is very true. And I think I responded to that like you blew my mind, because it is a very, like, a Futurama joke is like a double joke. It's sort of like the Oakley and Weinstein Simpsons episodes. It's like, it's not just the face value joke. There's a joke hidden in it.
Until I read this comment, I never thought of it as more than just a comment on racist Southerners, but instead it is also about how the moon rises every day or every night. Get it? Mm-hmm. Get it? It is really clever. They were too clever by half on the Futurama staff.
It was true, and that's why we're doing this show, and that's why they lasted so long. So thanks for listening to all of our stuff. I gotta say again, it's been a pretty exhausting couple of weeks, but we are so happy, and all of our work is paying off and everyone is happy. I have not heard I've heard like no complaints about anything we've been doing, which is great. Everybody's been so positive, and we're gonna keep rolling out with these new shows, and we're working so far ahead of time. I think we're buying ourselves a little bit of time off. At least Henry definitely is. I'm just gonna be sitting alone in my apartment in my underwear.
I mean, I could go for a staycation. I'm actually gonna be going to speaking of Disney, Anna, I'm going to Disneyland for my first time ever on this honeymoon
awesome.
With my hubby.
I've even been there like three times.
Man,
I can't believe that.
Though me and you got to go on a trip to Universal Hollywood. I think I say this every talk to the audience.
It'll happen. I think
someday.
When we hit 10K, maybe that can be a fun reward, and we can get some content out of it.
Well, we'll be doing it sooner than later based on how much it's been going up. So thanks.
Yeah, we really appreciate all of your support, folks. And please enjoy the shows, and we'll see you next month for another episode of Talk to the Audience. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Infotainment.